This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Hey, everybody, it's Michael Steele here. Now, I know you're waiting for the next big episode of the Michael Steele Podcast, but in the meantime, give a listen to this Michael Steele Podcast quick take.
Welcome back, everyone. We're having a great conversation with Dahlia Lithwick. She has joined us from her perch over at the Slate, where she is a senior editor, and she has an upcoming book. When is your book coming out, by the way?
We're going to know in a couple weeks.
Well, we'll be looking out for Lady Justice when it hits the Amazon, as they say. The only consistent thing we have among the three branches of government is the Supreme Court. So they can't afford to play the politics because the politics changes. And so the law and the Constitution has to have some kind of a bedrock to it. It's got to be stable. It's got to be something you can rely on, because we know the politics changes, and so it does behoove them to approach their job not in the space of political whims. But in the space of looking at the longer the game, and that also requires looking back. That's why stare decisis and tradition, capital T, matter as much as what is right in front of them in the moment.
You know what? You've also just answered this question of why it is that Thomas and Alito are so mad, right? Because they can't play the long game. They're getting old. I think you're looking at, Bush judges, Bush 1 and Bush 2 judges, who are feeling that they don't have 20 years, they don't have 30 years to effectuate the things they want. And it is exactly why the Trump justices, even though, as you say, they come out of the Federalist Society, they're handpicked by Leonard Leo, they are selected in order to help make these outcomes come true. They look around and say, I don't need to do it this term. I can do it in 5 years. I can do it in 10 years. This is a long game. And I think that that's exactly the answer to the absolute uncanny frustration. If you think about last week, when Alito was on, quote unquote, the losing side in the Affordable Care, Act case, certainly on the losing side in Fulton, and how angry he is. What he's angry about is, dude, I've been on the court for a really long time, and I would like to see certain outcomes, and they're not happening. And I think that when you are in your 50s, you have the luxury of saying, these things are going to happen. And we should be really clear, I think, that the court, I wrote a very stupid piece a few weeks ago where I said, hey, it's working. They're not taking a big Second Amendment gun challenge, to broaden the rights after Heller. They're not taking a court that's going to kneecap Roe v. Wade. And within a week of that, they took both of those cases for next term. So I couldn't have been more wrong. My sense was that they were going to go slower. But I do think that what you've just laid out really explains why, if you're Kavanaugh, if you're Gorsuch, if you're Barrett, and if you're the chief, you can look around at the landscape and say, I don't have to get it all done today.
Right.
If you're Sam Alito and you've been trying to get this done, then it's very maddening to have the court, particularly on Fulton, particularly on the Affordable Care Act. We saw it this week with the union's decision out of California. Those are, you know, those really matter. They've been priorities for a long time. And when they don't come about, I guess Alito was on the winning side in the union's case. But I think that that's where you see that frustration.
Yeah,
that it, I don't have 30 years to do this.
You don't. They don't. And they realize that, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that they can't force the cases to come up through the system to get in front of them. And even when they do sometimes, the energy inside the court is to say, nah, we're not going to deal with that. And they just, they don't accept it, which they did that. What case was that this week where they didn't even entertain, they just said, no, we don't want to hear the case. I forget which one that was. It'll come to me, but I mean, they have that tendency to sort of, you know, to your point about the long game, to say, no, not now. We're not going to deal with that particular subject matter. So it puts the light, for example, on two cases I want to get into with you. The first is, and you wrote about it in your conversation with Erwin Chemerinsky.
Chemerinsky, yep.
Yeah, Chemerinsky. So this is the Fulton versus City of Philadelphia case, which was a 9-0 decision by the court dealing with major religious freedom. So this case, as Erwin noted, Philadelphia contracts with social services agencies to do inspections and placements with regard to foster care. And the city of Philadelphia said in an order for social service agencies to contract, it has to agree to not discriminate on the basis of sex, race, religion, sexual orientation. Catholic social services, which I'm very familiar with as a member of the board of Catholic Charities here in Washington, brought a challenge to this and said because of its religious beliefs, it would not attest that it would not discriminate. And in fact, it could not place children with same-sex couples. The lower court, the district court in the U.S. Court of Appeals to the Third Circuit, ruled in favor of Philadelphia and against Catholic services. It gets to the Supreme Court, and what happens?
This is a follow-on to a whole line of cases. People probably know the famous one is the Masterpiece Cake Shop, right? Where the baker in Colorado says that he cannot, in accordance with his faith, produce a cake to solemnize a same-sex wedding. And that case goes all the way up to the Supreme Court. And Anthony Kennedy is still on the court at the time, so it's pre-Kavanaugh, writes a very, very narrow opinion, essentially saying, look, I am solicitous to the nth degree of gay rights, right? He wrote every important gay rights case of our lifetimes, including Obergefell, the marriage equality case. But I've always had in the back of my head that there needs to be an escape valve for religious dissenters, for religious objectors. And that has been, in some sense, the collision between those two sets of values, LGBTQ equality on the one hand, and religious dissenters who cannot, under the constraints of their faith, do anything that puts an imprimatur of approval on marriage equality. That line of cases really, excuse me, comes to a head here in Fulton. Because as you just said, we now have on a collision course these civil rights laws, these public accommodation laws that say you don't get to, in the city of Philadelphia, be a licensed, taxpayer-funded, you know, foster care placement entity or approval entity, and also discriminate. You don't get to do those two things. And just as Masterpiece Cake Shop was this really deft, almost a decision not to decide. In Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Supreme Court ended up saying, of course we believe in these civil rights and public accommodation laws, but we need to allow that the state discriminated against this baker in the way they made the decision and the statements they made, that almost is completely imported into Fulton. So what you have, and this is where it's really masterful, a 9-0 opinion, right? Props to John Roberts, where he gets the far right and the far left of the court to sign on to opinion that essentially does the same thing. In a sense, they decide not to decide, because what they say is, we're not going to make a big proclamation about whether civil rights wins out on the one hand, or whether Catholic social services wins out on the other. We are simply going to say that in this particular instance, the city looks like it has exceptions. It allows the city to say there's exceptions for certain foster care entities. And because of that, it's not a rule of sort of general applicability under the test that's the determinant of that. And that if there are exceptions, then they cannot be said to be and he also says it's not a public accommodation, which is a remarkable part of this decision. And therefore, it looks like the city in this instance discriminated against Catholic social services. And it looks as though we're not going to make a pronouncement. We're not going to do away with Employment Division versus Smith, which is the test that has long stood to determine this. And you just end up with almost a decision not to decide. Slight thumb on the scale for Catholic social services. The decision was wrongly taken, but we're not going to make a big global pronouncement about these competing two values.
And what does that mean, Dahlia? I mean, because a decision not to decide means at some point a future court is going to have to decide. I mean, conservatives, if nothing, they are dogged in their determination to overturn certain social, what have become social norms. So I see future challenges to marriage, Burgerfeld. I see future challenges to Roe, obviously, and future challenges in this religious freedom space. While this was a win, arguably, There will be other cases, and I would suspect a rise from those on the more progressive left end of the spectrum that will come back to make the case that these types of institutions, if you want to play that way, if you want to say that they can discriminate, then take away their tax subsidies. That's the next, and that will, for me, when that case comes, that will be a very interesting. It'll be interesting to hear how some conservatives howl, because they will be howling when that case gets in front of them. So what do cases like this mean going forward? What do you look out for? And maybe even what do you see currently on the landscape that could give rise to that kind of a challenge in one or two court cycles from now?
Well, I think one of the things that came out in that conversation I had with Dean Chemerinsky from Berkeley is he feels probably fractionally stronger than I do that the court has actually decided these cases already, but they're doing them on the so-called shadow docket.
And yes, so, I wanted to talk to you about the shadow. Okay, talk about the shadow docket, because you have a great piece out where you're basically saying the court is now, you know, saying the quiet stuff out loud. Go ahead.
Well, the shadow docket is the notion that the court more and more is doing things in these perfunctory one-line orders in cases that are not argued or briefed. And so the term shadow docket, I think it was Will Bowd's term, Steve Laddick has written about it a lot. And it's the notion that the one thing the court has to do is have cases that are fully argued, fully briefed, and that are decided on the merits with full opinions.
Right.
And the shadow docket is the name for these late night orders that come out. We've seen them in a lot of death penalty cases, and we saw them in a lot of COVID cases, where the court doesn't go through that whole process. They just sort of smack down a two-paragraph order that doesn't fully reason out what's happening. And the cases that were quite worrisome that were decided on the shadow docket this year were some of the COVID cases, where you had religious entities that were challenging shutdown orders, for instance, in California and New York. And the court would say, no, if you have bike shops open, you have to open the churches. If you have nail salons open, you have to open the churches. Mm-hmm. And we had a series of those cases, but there's no real rule of the case. We don't know what the holding is. We just know that the court was saying, if Governor Newsom says that bike shops can be open, then all the churches get to be open. If there's an exception in some sense for the non-religious entity, there has to be an exception for the religious entity. And because those were decided on the shadow docket, their law, they're cited by other courts later,
right.
But we don't know exactly what the ruling is. And so that's a long way of saying that what we saw on the shadow docket was this, the term that the religious liberty folks are using is most favored nation status. And that the idea is exactly that. If you give nail salons or casinos an exemption, you have to give it to the churches and the synagogues. That happened quietly on the shadow docket this year while nobody was watching. And I think the point that I was making in that article is that's exactly what just happened in Fulton, and we all missed it. What the court essentially said in Fulton is, if you're going to grant some entities exceptions and exemptions, then religious liberty requires that you give those exemptions to religious entities. And that really is a revolutionary idea. And the concern, I think, that Dean Chemerinsky was expressing in that interview was, oh, actually, that already happened. It's just that it happened in a two-paragraph order on the COVID cases that was then imported into Fulton, and now it's the law. So I don't know if that was clear, but that's essentially the concern, is that the court is making law in the dark of night in three paragraphs with sometimes unsigned orders. We don't actually even know which justices sign off on some of these. and that can't be precedent, although it is becoming precedent. So I think that's the worry, and the worry is the shadow docket cases get decided on an exigency basis, right? This is an emergency. Donald Trump was big on running to the court and saying, yeah, right, it's an emergency. I don't want to go through all the hoops. Let's just get this thing enjoined. And I think the concern is we're going to have more and more and more emergencies, and the court's going to be making these decisions with these sort of back of the envelope orders.
I told you I'd bring the smarts on the Supreme Court, folks. I just told you. And Dahlia, yeah, she's got it.
Thanks for downloading this Michael Steele podcast quick take. Now, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts, where, guess what? You can review us. You can give us 5 stars. Oh, yeah. I love the 5-star rating. Or you can catch us on iHeart, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands in stock, 50% off retail. lostgolfballs.com.